Ladies and gentlemen, it's 6 o'clock, and it is the meeting is going to be called to order. Before I do call the meeting to order, if anyone would like to speak before this commission, there is a sign-up sheet in the back room. Otherwise, hearing nothing, may we have, I'm calling this meeting to order, and can we have roll call, please?
Mickey Day.
I'm present.
Dave Clemish.
Here.
Dan Clemack.
Here.
Cindy Schwab.
Here.
Christopher Keckler.
Here.
Brock Williamson.
Here.
William Mills is excused. Oh, Jim Bandera.
Here.
Chris Billick.
Here.
Thank you for roll call. Third item on the agenda is minutes of... minutes of the meeting. Our last meeting was March 6th, 2018. If you've all reviewed the minutes, may I have a motion to accept those minutes?
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. Fourth, we're actually switching it up a little bit. I think that... John Steinbrink would like to do his director's meeting first. You did change it. I see it here. Sorry.
Director. All right, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission.
Normally.
First, I would just like to welcome our newest Park Commission member as an alternate, Mr. Chris Billick. We're very excited to have him on the commission. I think he's going to be a great addition, so I'd like to welcome him. And the next thing is I want to just jump ahead a little bit. I know when we had our meetings and we talked about the Park and Opus base plan and the revisions, I believe it was April 25th, we had the public information meeting. We had a large contingent of people from the Carroll Beach area voice an opinion on, you know, the improvements that they wanted to see or not see, or the changes to make in the plan on the Lake Michigan parkland, which I believe is named Prairie Shores Park. So staff went and we listened to all the comments. We implemented them into the plan. And of this plan, really the biggest change that we made was to that Prairie Shores Park area. Before, if you guys remember, that had been on the commission for a while, 6 years ago, we went through the same process, and the public wanted to kind of keep the people out, charge it, make some improvement, fence it around. So that's how we developed the plan. Biggest change now that we made was we took all those improvements out. We have noticed a lot of erosion issues, so we are going to have some money for erosion repair. We did budget some money to study that in 2019, if the board will pass that. And, so we're definitely excited to make that change, to be very cognizant of what the residents want in that area. So I just wanted to mention that ahead of time, and that's all I have to report.
Thank you. Citizen comments. Should we get the list up if anyone signed up for citizen comments? When you come up, we would like you to speak into the mic because it's kept on the record, and we would need your name and your address, please.
Lakeshore Drive. Could you hear me? Sorry.
Yes,
Rosalie Villano, 8630 Lakeshore Drive. I'm the president of the Carroll Beach Property Owners Association, and I wanted to just thank John for his great support in listening to the residents. He was open and listened closely to what we had to say. Overwhelmingly, the residents both up and down Carroll Beach, and especially those that were proximal to the park area, overwhelmingly did not want the improvements, as supported by the survey that we did for the Carroll Beach Property Owners Association. About 90% said they did not want the improvement that was in the plan, and an equal number, a little bit more actually, said they wanted natural improvements to help bring the beach back to its natural state and control erosion as much as possible. So the reason for my standing up here tonight is just to formally recognize John and to say thank you from the citizens of Carroll Beach for listening and for being open to a change in direction. We really appreciated it. So we'll do everything in our power to help go forward in this next stage of development, which is the erosion control and bringing the beach back into its natural state as much as possible. So, again, kudos to John for great leadership on this issue.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Villano. Does anyone have any questions? Terrific. I appreciate you coming to the meeting this evening and encourage you to come back again. We enjoy input from the community and know, you know, what the community is thinking and what they like and don't like as well, you know.
So we'll keep in close touch with John on this issue for sure. So thank
terrific.
You.
And we do agree with you. We think that Mr. Steinbrink is a great asset to our community. Thank you. Keith Humphreys. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Humphreys. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? If not, we'll move on to item number six, new business. Eagle Scout completed a project, and he's going to and have a presentation. Matthew Hupp. And Troop 583.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting me come speak. I wanted to come present the completion of my project that I had presented at the last board meeting. My project included at the RecPlex in Pleasant Prairie at the archery range there. I made new target stands for that archery range that now have platforms for people who would like to bring their own targets. I also realigned the targets so that they're straight. I put in new holes for the yardage markers and aligned them with the targets so that people who are shooting have somewhere where they can rest their bows on, or there's also now air holders on there now, so it's not so far off, and it's in line with targets. I also realigned the benches that are there so they're straight, and there's a little more space for people to sit there with the overgrowing bushes behind it, so it's a little more space for them. These are some pictures of before the project. Some of the phases I did were I had to fundraise. Fundraising and buying all materials came out to roughly around $800. And you can see as there's more phases, as in more detail of what I did to build the project. For fundraising, I hosted a brat sale at Festival Foods. I also received donations from people who would like to help with my project. Use some pictures from fundraising. We had a total of 20 volunteers who came out and helped with my project, and with a grand total of 271 combined hours, including the couple million mosquitoes. Use some pictures during the project. As you can see, these are some pictures of during building the new targets. These are some more pictures and actual drone pictures taken from by a member from the Village of Pleasant Prairie. I'd like to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to build this project and work towards getting my eagle.
Thank you very much, Matthew. It's it's a wonderful addition and upgrade to our parks, and we really appreciate your effort and congratulate you. You are now Eagle Scout, right?
I have not earned it yet. My goal is to go for my Eagle Board review by the end of this year.
Terrific. Well, I'm confident that you're going to do very well in that.
Thank you.
You're a fine young man. Thank you for your help in the community.
Thank you.
Any questions for Matt?
Matt, what were some obstacles you had to overcome that you weren't expecting?
Some obstacles were when I had originally planned out how much I roughly would need to spend, I didn't really plan it correctly, so we ended up having, instead of, we were originally going to just add two targets onto the existing bail targets and not take any out, but funding didn't really allow that, so then we ended up taking one bail target out, and then now I think we have, I believe it's six targets there, I think.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Appreciate
your
help. And we're lucky enough to have Mason Kiernan, also from Troop 583.
Hello, my name is Mason Kernan from Troop 583, and I would like to present what I want to do for my Eagle Project. So, in Brookside Gardens Park, I would like to make a 32-foot bridge. It's going to be 8 feet wide to allow lawnmowers to cross, and it will be much like the bridge designed at the Donald Hackbarth Trail. Some of the supplies I'll need is a lot of 8 feet 4x6s, leg screws, and a whole lot of stuff just to help put it in. For my phases, I will need to do lots of fundraising, an estimated $2,000, and I'll start building the bridge and host a day to assemble the bridge. Some fundraising ideas I have is a brat sale at Festival, car washes at Quick Trip, and chocolate sales from Saru G's Chocolates. I plan to get volunteers from family, friends, and fellow troop members. And this is just some safety concerns that might occur. We will definitely have a first aid kit, and it will be a must to have safety goggles and gloves. This is where the bridge will go. It doesn't really look like much, but the bridge will cross the creek. And this is where it is, Brookside Gardens Park. And the red rectangle shows where it will go. To your right is the Donald Hackbarth Trail Bridge. This is what it will be most likely like. And I made a CAD drawing of what it will look like in all the dimensions that it will include. And this is the actual creek at a different angle. And this is one of the entrances to the park that includes the playground equipment.
Mason, you said you made the CAD drawing yourself. Are you taking that in school, or did you have help with some professionals doing that?
I just kind of did it by myself with a little assistance from my dad.
Terrific. Impressive. Any other questions?
I had a couple. For the 8 foot wide dimensions for the lawnmowers, that's for the village grounds crew. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The village will be assisting him with this project. We did have structural engineers design the Don Hackbarth Bridge, so we'll be using the exact same design to make sure that it's safe for the traveling public and for the loads that it may carry. And we also plan on assisting him in some of the excavation of the holes and some of the large beams crossing the bridge. We'll actually have our crews work with him on that. But as far as all of the really hard labor and all the funding of the bridge and the railings and all the 4x6, it will all be done by him independently. And his
might answer the next few questions as well. So that's very, very good, and I'm glad to see the village is able to partner and establish this. As far as the procurement of the lumber, just through one of the local lumber yards?
I I'm going to try to get it from Lowe's or Menards, depending on what kind of deals I can get.
Yeah. All right.
Good job. Make sure you do that 11% rebate at Menards.
Yeah.
Mason, when do you plan on getting started?
I'm going to try to finish it by summer, but before the end of summer.
All right. Do you have any idea how long it will take?
It's definitely going to take a while, but I don't actually know how long it will take to finish.
Okay. Depends on how many volunteers you get, right?
Yeah.
And just the other follow-up one, because I remember when we dedicated this, and obviously the water trench that runs through there, the 30-foot wide span, that should obviously cover any type of potential large deluge of water that may come through there, correct?
Yeah, the village is going to set the elevations to make sure that we're over the 100-year storm event. So we'll make sure we set the elevations. We'll work with him for any permits that he needs to get, so we're all above board with all those details.
Nice.
ADA compliant?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mason, is there a trail there now? One of the maps, it looks like there's a trail of some sort.
There's not really a trail. It was an, I think it was an old business park, and it was playground equipment was put in. And it's just a creek that was left there that they want a bridge put over.
Okay.
If I can just add one quick comment, this is the site where the original Manutronics was, off of Springbrook between 26th and 24th. So then the village acquired that property. We raised the building. And if you guys remember, there was a copy machine there and everything else in there. So we really took a blighted use in a residential area and turn it into a park. I know working with local Eagle Scouts, we're really making some great improvements. We're very excited to have Mason and his troops, you know, assist in these improvements. It's a great story at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And the neighbors do know of this yet or no?
I did not inform any of them. So.
I'm sure they're. We'll read the minutes from the meeting here.
Yeah. So. Well, we look forward to you coming back and giving us updates and finishing the project. Thank you very much, Mason.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. Isn't it nice to have young men like that?
That's great. Yeah.
Isn't it wonderful? And item number C, review updated park and open space plan for the years 2018 to 23.
Hello, good evening. I'm Blake Tyson from Ayers Associates. For some of you, we have met before. For some of you, this is the first time. So thanks for having me. I think I saw you last in April when we had our public information meeting. So I'll catch you up to date with what we've done since then. Tonight, I want to go through the composition of the plan. Hopefully, you've all had a chance to at least take a look at it or hold it. If you haven't opened it, I understand. So I'll give you a quick rundown of how it's structured and some of the highlights of the plan. And then we are looking to finish this up here in the next month or so, pending any wholesale changes that you guys might have. It's been through several staff reviews, so we feel that it's been vetted fairly well at that level. So just to get everyone back up to speed, a CORP or Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan is an analysis of all public lands assets, right? So all of your linear open spaces, your neighborhood, community, mini park, conservancy areas. We try to have these documents updated every 5 years. All the recommendations that come out of these documents get tied into your CIP. So it's nice to have that long forecast look so you can plan for some of the bigger implementation projects. One of the other important things to know about a CORP is that it is required by the Wisconsin DNR to be eligible for grant funding. So to have this plan updated every 5 years is a mandate for that eligibility. So we are within that window, assuming we can get it passed here before the turn of the year. And in theory, you'd be eligible for 2019 stewardship grant dollars to start implementation. So we started off in April with our initial kickoff meeting. We went out and did field work immediately thereafter. So we visited all the sites. We picked some pretty wet condition days because we like to see where the drainage problems are, That gives us a good glimpse into some of the issues we need to fix. And we had no shortage of wet days this spring to choose from. We had a public survey open for about 2 months, and we got quite a bit of feedback, and we'll touch on some of the highlights here in a minute. We came back with some preliminary recommendations in late June, and that went through some village review, and we submitted our first draft report in the month of July, which again went through some review and revisions. We compiled our five-year forecast for the CIP, and in October we submitted our second round of recommendations and plan. And hopefully we can get through tonight and the next couple weeks here if there's any lingering recommendations, get that finalized and adopted, and we'll move into 2019. So the actual format of the plan, Chapter 1, starts off with an executive summary, kind of tells you what you need to know at a very high level. We go through some of the goals and objectives, which I think is a very important piece of this document, right? That kind of sets the expectation of why we're doing this and what we hope to get out of it over the next 5 years. We provided a short summary of some of the other planning documents that pertain to your park and open space. For example, the county plan, the bike and pedestrian plan, your comprehensive plan, all of those things have related recommendations and analyses. We also give a summary of the public survey results. And in the appendix of the plan, all of the raw data is included. But in Chapter 1, we tried to keep it short and sweet and just give you the important things in a graphic format. And Chapter 1 concludes with a review of your demographic patterns. Okay, and you'll see in our appendix, we have quite a few maps that look at different age cohorts within your community. Because let's be honest, my six-year-old needs a different recreational amenity than my 74-year-old father, right? So I want to look to see where these different elements are placed in the community and to make sure that it matches with our demographic patterns. That make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Beautiful. Chapter 2, we get into the inventory of what you actually have in terms of open space assets, right? We relate all of these assets to a national standard in terms of size and amenity offerings. Okay, the National Park and Rec Association has classification systems that we follow. So you might hear the term mini park, neighborhood park, community park, conservancy. That's all based on the national standard. And so that's important because everyone likes to benchmark where they're at, right? How do I compare to my neighbor or my neighboring community? So what we try to do is show you on a land use basis how you're faring both with your current demographics, your projected demographics in the year 2040, and how does that compare to some of the surrounding communities, right? Are we holding our own in terms of our public space offerings? The term service area is also very important. Those classification systems, each type of park has what we call a service area. Okay, the distance that I can reasonably expect someone to travel to those parks. Right, so a mini park naturally is going to have the smallest service area because it has the least amount of offerings. A neighborhood park is going to grow that service area because there's more things for you to do. And a community park is usually a destination facility, so you're probably going to drive. Maybe on a good day we're riding our bikes, but most often it's a larger facility that has a special facility. Maybe it's a sports complex, you know, a set of ball diamonds or a tennis complex that may not be in the other sectors of the community. So when we start to overlay all those service areas, which I'll show you on a graphic here, that shows me how much of the community is adequately covered by park facilities, right? Because we have a whole bunch of circles overlaying each other, and that shows me where the gaps are in our open space system. Chapter 2 also digs into a little bit of our bike-ped connections, right? I always like to see your open spaces connected with some sort of either on-road or off-road facility so that we can presumably get to and from these spaces without having to get in a motor vehicle. It's a little bit more challenging in your community just because of the way your land use patterns are set up, right? You have large pockets of industrial. You have very large pockets of natural open space. So it's a little bit more challenging, but you do have a really good network. Right? Chapter 3 is where we dig into our recommendations, and I always start off with a discussion of general system-wide recommendations. So wayfinding to your parks, standardizing your park signs, which you do really well at, making sure we have ADA-compliant facilities throughout the system, okay, would fall under some of these general. And then we get into individual park site recommendations. And so the bulk of Chapter 3, I'm going to skip ahead here. The bulk of Chapter 3, you'll see sheets that look like this. Okay, for every site, we give you basically 2 pages of content. Right, so on the first page, we have a list of all the open space assets found in the park. We have a list of the issues that we perceive or that we hear about through the survey or through village input, staff input. We have a discussion of any programs or maintenance that happens in the site. And then we have a list of our recommendations and costs that are tied to those recommendations. So it's a nice way, in a very quick page flip, I can see everything I need to know about that site. Okay. And then the second page of that usually captures some of the key images, both good and bad. Okay. It's always nice to document some of the flaws with a photograph so that when you go to ask for money to fix it, you can say, well, here's the proof, here's why we need to fix this. The other thing I should have said off the top here, a corp can be viewed in 2 ways. You can use this document to brag about how great your system is, and there's value to that. But in my opinion, it's a better tool to use to beg for money to fix some of the issues. And so please don't take any of this stuff personally. I'm not trying to say, oh, you have major problems here or there. Not the intent, okay? It's trying to give you the tools you need to help fix some of the issues. Okay. So I mentioned the survey earlier. We had just over 100 people respond, and we had good input. It was no surprise to me that the highest requested type of facilities were those for seniors, mobility issues, more trails, more walking paths. Community gardens was quite a popular request. So the transportation issue and some of the more passive use amenities were the top rated elements. So if you look at our pie graph here, 40% of respondents said that their top priority for your system was maintaining and improving your existing facilities over development of new large-scale facilities. So we have to take this data and the field analysis data and the comparison to national standards data. Those are all snapshots, right, of your system, and we can't take one of these and say, okay, well, this is the direction we have to go based on this data set. You have to take it all into consideration and figure out what makes the most sense based on all these different parameters. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So most people don't want to go through all the raw data and the individual comments, but it is all included in the appendix if you want to go through all that. But the summary we've provided, I think, captures most of the feedback. Any questions on the survey before I go on? So this slide kind of captures some of the main requests in a pictorial form, right? So the trails and pathways, community gardens, some interpretive signage in some of your natural spaces. It's always a nice education piece in the parks. So, I mentioned the 55 and older crowd, there was quite a bit of request for exercise equipment in some of the parks. And we often see that request tied in with some of the pathway networks, right? That way you can get out, you can get your exercise in multiple forms in one space. Okay, jumping into some of the maps here. This is the service area map that I mentioned earlier. You can see these different colored concentric circles, right? The purple is your neighborhood scale. The brown is the mini park. The purple is community. The green would be the neighborhood scale. And Pleasant Prairie is a little bit unique. You have what I would consider a regional park facility. So that really doesn't fit into the NRPA classification system. So the graphic in the upper right depicts what we have determined to be a reasonable service area for such a facility. I mean, the Recplex is a huge community asset. You draw people from well outside of your municipal boundaries. We do look at the population density of the community, and this map shows you kind of the hot spots of all ages. Okay, probably this is no surprise. You can see the large yellow area, which is most of the industrial complex. In the southeastern quad, you can see another yellow node that is heavy conservancy space. Okay, so we take that one step further. We start to look at those different age groups, right? I mentioned earlier, I want to know what ages 2 to 5, where are they in the community today? And are they, are our recreational amenities in the right spot for those age groups? So we break it into 4 subcategories. We have 2 to 5, 5 to 9, 10 to 17, and then 55 and older. Right? And I often get asked, Blake, well, what happens to all of those people in between 18 and 54? Well, we have that covered on another map. We look at the general population, right? And we want to make sure that we have adequate park facilities. But generally speaking, that 18 to 54, they're using all types of facilities. They don't need special types of recreational amenities. Does that make sense? Okay. So this map shows you concentrations of different facilities by type. So, for example, if I want to know where all the basketball courts are or where all the playgrounds are located, this breaks out all of those assets into those types. This is a great tool for new families moving to the community. Okay, realtors call me all the time and ask me for this graphic because as they start to show houses, especially to families with young children, they want to know where some of these things are grouped because parks increase property values, right? And I know many people want to buy homes closer to those parks, especially when they have young children. So moving into our recommendations, some of the general recommendations for the system, installing more bike racks, and bike racks should always be placed on a hard surface, whether that's asphalt or concrete. Right? One of the worst things to do is pull up on your bike and the bike rack is sitting in a muddy, low spot. So, and let's face it, a lot of our parks don't have high, dry, prime land. Right? We're often left with kind of remnant parcels or brownfield sites that we're trying to make the best out of. So it's important to put all of our amenities on hard surfaces when we can. We looked at all your drinking fountains, and it's important to know that to be an ADA-compliant drinking fountain, you need a high and a low bowl facility for users of all abilities. That's one of those things that most people don't think about until you are faced with a scenario where you may need that or with someone who does need a different height. So trash and recycling receptacles, it'd be nice to see more recycling and other amenities within the parks. We looked at a lot of the ADA issues, and we tried to catalog all of the, I don't want to say violations, but issues that we think could be improved. So that's listed on all those asset summary sheets. And there are some place structures in your system that have probably seen better days, right? And they're beyond their typical lifespan. So we've tried to outline a strategy to get into a regular replacement of those structures. And we've identified the ones in the worst condition that should be replaced first. So there is a whole table that outlines that strategy. Some of the older playgrounds may have sand or other materials that don't meet current playground codes. So we've identified those and given you some options. You can either have engineered wood fiber, which looks like mulch, but is actually a very specific size shred, or you can look at recycled rubber. You can look at poured-in-place rubber, which is that uniform mat, if you've ever been on a PIP playground. They're quite nice. They're a little bit more spendy, but they are the safest environment for children.
Lasts a long time, too.
So here, again, I like pictures, so we wanted to capture some of these items. It seems a little bit strange, but play structures have what's called an ADA transfer platform. Or I said most current structures have this. So in theory, you are able to wheel yourself, if you're in a chair or other mobility device, right up to the structure and transfer your body onto the play structure. Unfortunately, that requires having some sort of either concrete sidewalk or poured-in-place rubber access pad to that transfer platform. So if you look at that middle image, the lowest landing on that climber is actually that ADA transfer platform, but it is well removed from any hardscape. So the image on the right highlights some inadequate surfacing. So that's just one of those things to try and get on a regular cycle to replace. Sand, if there's any sand in the system, it has to come out. Sand is no longer compliant. The downfall of engineered wood fiber is that it has to be top dressed periodically, leveled out, you know, raked a couple times a year as it will degrade. So other issues, some of these structures you can see by the flaking paint, and they've surpassed their lifespan. Some of the stainless steel slides have quite a bit of denting, whether it's from hail or kids or teenagers, who knows. I remember as a kid I used to love throwing pea gravel up these stainless steel slides, which probably didn't do them any favors, right? Luckily we don't have pea gravel surfacing in our playgrounds anymore. So I kind of covered this slide earlier. Every site will have this set of individual recommendations. And the cost in the recommendation section at the bottom of this page, these are all rippled into the CIP tables in the back of the plan. So you'll see all of these items, again, in that CIP piece. And we've tried to allocate it over 5 years in a priority that we think is appropriate. Our first level of priority is to address health, safety, and welfare issues. Second is accessibility. And then third would be deficiencies, right? If we're missing a certain type of recreation amenity, that is a third priority recommendation. Okay, I wanted to touch on what John mentioned earlier. The top graphic on this slide is the concept plan from Lake Michigan Park from the 2013 plan, which obviously identified a much higher level of development on the site. We heard the comments. You know, we had quite a bit of site review. We have pulled the scale way back on that. We are allocating a good chunk of money to try and fix some of the erosion control and restoration items to turn that beachscape back to where it should be in its natural form. We've also plugged in some money to fix some of the drainage issues on top of the dunes adjacent to the rope. So I just wanted to kind of highlight this because I know this was a big discussion item over the last few months. I know I've had quite a few inquiries straight to my office about it, so I just wanted to highlight this for everyone, both in front of me and behind me tonight. Chapter 4 is where we tell you how to do all this. We give you some strategies for, obviously, we need to adopt this plan to make it official. It can be tied to your comprehensive plan, right? So as you move forward and implement some of your comp plan items, this should be looked at as well. And as developers come in for new neighborhoods or new commercial sites, make sure you address or you review this document, because as developers look at new residential communities, obviously we need to take into account park impact fees, right? And making sure that we have new parklands within these residential developments. So it's important to have access for everyone as we build out the community. I have 6 or 7 pages of grants and other funding leverage mechanisms to look at. So I understand that the $2 million that I forecast over the next 5 years to address some of these issues may be on a steep side, you know, based on some of your typical park budgets. So I always like to give you options as to how you can supplement some of your normal municipal funds. And then Chapter 4 includes all of our CIP tables, again, broken out by year and broken out by park and by type. There's lots of different ways to scrutinize the data, if you're a data scrutinizer. So this map, it's map 10 in your plan. It kind of highlights some of the major recommendations within the parks, right? So it's showing you where we think your playgrounds need to go, where the splash pad is going to go. And you'll see I've also added a red circle. For those of you who've been on the commission for a while, you may remember we went through some concept plans for the property across the street here in preparation for any future development. So on map 10, I'm sorry, my pointer's not going to work on your screen, but you'll see that red circle. That is identifying the two most likely future parks within your system. Okay, so this is the concept plan that we ended up with, the Village Square site, and then the Neighborhood Common site, which is just west of us here. This is where we ended up. So as those parcels become developed and we move forward with the downtown development plans, it'll be nice to see these come online, right, and be a nice addition to your system. So that's kind of the overview. Happy to take any questions or field comments that you might have.
Anyone have any comments?
Are we going to residents first, or should we? There's a few resident comments.
Well, actually, that's appropriate just to talk to the board. It's actually only okay. Appropriate for board right now because we have already did citizens' comments. Okay. I'm sorry.
I have a question on the, Blake, you had talked about the surfacing in the parks, what's compliant, what's not. Could you just give a quick history on what used to be code and what isn't?
Yeah, it's frustrating because codes change no matter what industry you're looking at as we move through. Pea gravel used to be perfectly acceptable, right? Sand used to be perfectly acceptable and very, very common. Those were the two most common, quite frankly. Sand has fallen out of favor for various reasons. Frequented by animals for litter boxes, right? So that's an unsanitary condition to have kids playing in. Pea gravel doesn't have the impact attenuation that we would hope for, right? So there are multiple studies that have taken watermelons, which is the same density as a human head, and dropped it on all these different surface types to see what type of resiliency and impact resistance we're going to achieve, right? So you think about a child's head. If you fall off a structure, which kids do, and they jump and they do all kinds of things, we want to make sure that when that watermelon hits whatever surfacing type, we have enough resiliency that it's going to be acceptably safe, right? And there's a whole industry, the National Playground Safety Institute, that defines what that acceptable safety threshold is. The other factor that determines the safety surfacing type is the height of your structure. Okay, so the higher your structure is, obviously the farther you have to fall and the more velocity that watermelon is going to have when it hits the surface. So once you reach a certain height, you are mandated to use certain types of surfacing. So, for example, when you have I may get my heights slightly wrong here, but I'm just going to give you an example. If you have a deck on a play structure that's over 6 feet, right, you cannot use engineered wood fiber unless you have a depth of it greater than 9 inches. Then you have to go to rubber, loose fill rubber, which is, you know, recycled tires, for example. Or the poured in place surfacing, which is that uniform rubber surface that has the highest impact attenuation, and there you can increase your fall heights considerably. Was that more technical than
so
you wanted?
The choices nowadays are the poured in place or the two different types of the recycled tires or the manufactured rubber.
Or engineered wood fiber, which looks like mulch, but it's ground to a certain particulate size. Which
and the poured in place doesn't need maintenance, I'm guessing, and the other two need to be top filled from
correct.
Time to time.
Yeah, PIP, once it's installed, it's pretty well done, unless someone burns it or cuts it out, which can happen. It's pretty rare. I mean, it's tough stuff, but I've done quite a few projects in the Milwaukee system, and you know, they have a whole different set of issues than you do here. But yeah, poured in place is kind of one and done.
Is that 9 inches thick as well?
No, it's about 2 3/4 inch thick.
In my playground, I have the rubber mulch, mm-hmm. and my kids have got a high play area, and and you only really need, because I studied it too, you don't need a lot, and that rubber mulch lasts forever. I've only retouched it up now. It's been 5 years, and it stays pretty level. It's a mm-hmm. pretty nice product.
Yeah, in the first year or two, you might notice you get some black residue on your hands and your shoes just because of the rubber's kind of wearing off. But then after a certain number of rain events, it'll clean itself up.
Any other questions? Yes.
Go ahead, Cindy. I just want to address the park shelters that are in the Carroll Beach area. I think that's going to be a question that many citizens are going to be concerned about. Could you just describe what you envision for those two park shelters you have listed?
Let me flip to that.
There's no park shelter.
There's two on this map right here that he has.
What slide number?
Would you have a page number that we could reference to quickly find it?
Yeah.
Slide 56 of 61, and it's labeled park shelter, and there's
natural area restoration.
Natural area restoration.
Well, the park shelter.
The lower one, which I think is where is labeled a park shelter, which is where I think the area that many citizens have been concerned about, and I don't think that park shelter is what they would be envisioning.
Slide 56, if you want to jump back to it.
So I just want to make sure that we address it before, you know, that we're all aware before questions kind of come up about it.
I thought that was natural.
I'm sorry, there is one. There's only one park shelter labeled.
It's slide 56.
You're talking about the Carroll Beach property?
Yeah, the Carroll Beach. And that, I mean,
I just want to,
you know, what's that vision so that we can let citizens.
So I believe we were looking at just an open-air structure. I think there's one there now. Are we talking about a different property?
Yeah, currently we have one at the Carroll Beach Park, which is in disrepair. We are proposing to put two more up, and they're probably very similar to the open-air shelters that we have at picnic area site number 2 is what we're doing. It's something for down the road in the future. Not saying it's going to be built quickly. Well, maybe if you could just rephrase your question now that we know the location, exactly what you're talking about.
So, yeah, I guess right now, where is the one that is existing?
There's one existing in the Carroll Beach Park, located around, I believe it's around 8th Avenue and
where
maybe 112.
So it's farther west.
Area.
It's a little west.
So it's in the Carroll Beach Park, you're saying?
Yes, it's Carroll Beach Park.
Yeah, the Carroll Beach Park is not...
Yeah,
on the lake shore.
But this one is on the lake that you have.
No, we're not proposing anything on the lake.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess what's concerned with the drawing may be slightly misrepresented then, because it shows the shelters to be two shelters and it shows it on the shoreline.
Right.
So that's what we're, I guess that's what
talking about these two.
Oh, I see.
One is actually
so close.
Yeah, one is... One is actually, when you look close to the computer, it is labeled natural area. The other one looks as though it's labeled on the beach.
I think
and that's where I think citizens would be.
It's too small.
All right, so we're actually looking at something maybe like a 10 by 10 shelter, so something that just kind of gets you out of the sun. There's a bike trail that's through there. It just kind of gets you out of the shade. That is what we are representing on this slide.
Okay,
it is a 10 by 10 shelter. So that's just an answer to the question.
So the diagram. So basically, visually, that diagram is kind of askew then. I mean, it's not.
The scale of this, I'm sorry, those symbols are not to scale, right?
Would it make more sense if in the legend we identify the size of the shelter somewhere? Would that help?
Or maybe even the location. I think that that kind of goes against what the citizens had said they wanted there, which was to
restore. You're talking specifically on the one.
Well, because I think you're going to get a lot of
shores.
Flack. Yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of flack because this looks like it's on
we're already getting
Prairie
it, yeah.
Shores, but you're saying it's not. So even if you could just slightly move that diagram or just, so it doesn't look like it's on Prairie Shores.
So the recommendation would be to eliminate the shelter at the Prairie Shores Park.
The other one is natural
the other
area
one is
restoration.
By 116th. I mean, if the recommendation is to remove both of them we can remove.
So the southern icon there shows a park shelter.
Yeah, we have that large park area. There's a lot of people that use it. It gets really hot this summer. Yeah. It gets very, very sunny, very warm. There would be like a 10x10 shelter. So if you're down there, you can sit. You can be out of the sun, in the shade.
Excuse me? There's the confusion. So you must be talking, we're talking, I think what I'm thinking based on the diagram is the one that's on the lake. And there is no shelter currently on the lake.
So there's a shelter here.
Right. So this is an implementation.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
It is for the lake. For chapter four, it's for the slide. So we are, this plan is proposed two 10x10 shelters. Very open air shelters, two posts, very similar to what the Eagle Scouts put in the other areas around the village. The intent is that when you're riding your bike, when you're walking, and if you want to get out of the sun, you can stop, sit at a bench under shade. It'll probably hold 2-3 people. Sit, enjoy a lunch, enjoy what you want to do out of the sun, carry on with your day. By no means is this anything that'll be large enough to host a party, to anything like that. It's just something to get out of the sun.
I'm sorry, sir. We can't have citizens' comments now. After the meeting, if you'd like to talk to us, but by the rules of this meeting.
Then can I ask a question? Could you specify better for us the exact location of the two shelters? That's still not clear to me. So.
What we can do as part of the revision process, we'll take the comments, we'll take the information that we have, we'll go back, and we can make sure that we have a better detail.
Yeah.
On the exact location, the sizing, and maybe even like an artist's rendering of this.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, and then if I can add something else too, this doesn't make the plan final after this evening. We're going to take the information that we take from the meeting this evening, make the revisions, and then it has to go to the plan commission. 30 days before the plan commission, it has to be publicly noticed, and the plan has to be available to the public.
Correct.
So whenever, you know, we get these comments, they're complete and available to the public, then we'll take 30 days, we'll find the next plan commission meeting, and then have that plan commission, it'll be public notice, the plan will be available with the comments from, you know, this entire process. Once the plan commission approves it, whenever they approve it, if it takes one meeting, two meetings, three meetings, then it goes to the village board. And then it's noticed again, and then the process continues. So there's still quite a bit more. The first step is just the staff review, which is what we've done, the plan commission, which we're doing this evening, and then we're going to make updates, bring it before the plan commission, and then it'll go to the village board. So we can take the comments that we have, and if the recommendation is a little more detail on these two specific shelters, so in artist rendering, we can go ahead and do that.
I think that it would probably be in the best interest so that citizens that live down there can review it and then, you know, see definitely the detail and then make recommendations if that's not what they want.
I guess something to consider also is that, you know, purpose of this plan is for the entire village.
Yeah. No.
And so we're trying to be very sensitive of what certain neighborhoods want, but still have the best fit for everyone that uses that. Lakeshore Drive, there's a lot of people that ride their bike. There's a lot of people that walk it. So we try to take that all into account.
Part of the bike plan.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, and there are benches down there now, and they are under shade trees. And I'm just foreseeing what you're going to get as citizen comments is that, you know, there are benches, there are trees, and, you know, it's the look of those permanent structures that I think, people feel like decrease the view of the lake, whether you live down there or you're visiting it. It's one of the few areas left along Lake Michigan that's really undeveloped, is some of those little stretches in Pleasant Prairie. And I think that many citizens feel that that brings value. So, I think the more detail we can give people so that they can make their voices heard, whether they agree or not agree, I think would be best.
I think that's great, and we definitely appreciate those comments. So the purpose of this meeting is for the staff and the consultant to present the plan to the Park Commission. The Park Commission will make a motion, and I presume that the motion may have some changes in it. And then whatever motion is made from a majority of the Park Commission is the direction that the staff will go when we bring it to the Plan Commission. And then the cycle will continue. So, I mean, this is all good, healthy conversation, and I look forward to doing whatever the Park Commission recommends at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Just a real quick point of clarification. Now that I understand the site, we're only showing one shelter. The other green symbol is for the dune restoration.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I noticed it. It's really tiny. So I know as soon as someone pointed that out, I noticed it. Yeah.
Excellent.
So
thank you for that clarification. Correct.
And one of the strange things I've come across was in the recommendations for Pleasant Prairie Park, it seems like we're shifting the it's indicated on page 66. If you want to look at it.
You're showing shifting some of the quartz and eliminating the ball diamonds?
That is correct. We actually, we do not use the ball diamonds at Pleasant Prairie Park since the addition of the four diamonds on the north side. So if you have been out there this past year, the backstops have been taken out. The sand base has been taken out, and it's all been grass. We have been working with the RecPlex staff for how they want to use that as an active park, and they plan on using it for their soccer and for their flag football programs.
That's good. One of the other issues I have is the location. It's kind of strange, is the location of the mailbox and the access to it.
What mailbox?
There's a... In right as you come into the parking lot for the park, there's a mailbox. There's a mailbox drop box.
Oh. There is a drop off by the U.S. Postal Service that's been there ever since I've been around.
Yeah,
I can contact the Postal Service if there's some sort of specific issue. I do know a lot of people drop their mailbox off. I'm not sure, even sure how it came across. There's some that's always been there. Is there a specific?
It recently moved. It was on 104th.
Now it's tucked off. Now would it's like in it it's removed, into the parking
what
lot.
What I'm understanding.
What's that?
You would like to see it removed? Is what your comment?
Well, not removed. Relocated or something. Maybe because it's kind of hard when that parking lot's full. It's kind of hard to turn around do a U-ey in the parking lot when there's a lot of cars.
Does the post office, I'm surprised that the post office moved it
there. I've not received any complaints from the post office, but maybe after the meeting I can work with Mr. Bandura and to get some recommendation. It must be obvious you must use this drop
box my wife
on a regular
does.
Basis.
Yes.
Okay, so maybe we can talk after
I
the meeting,
who
and if
decides
we can do some
who
repositioning,
the post,
I can work with the postal service
the
to make sure it's accommodating.
Just
if you're having issues with
stick
it,
the box
I would
there?
Presume other people are also.
Oh, I would think so.
It's good to have a collection box there.
Excuse me?
It's good to have a collection box in that area.
Yeah, it is.
Staying in that specific spot.
It might be a better design. Maybe if we can jockey it around or something to that effect so it's a little more open access.
Okay, well, I'll work with the
post office.
With the commissioners in the post office. I'm sure that's something we could even do this year if it's pretty minor. Correct.
It is.
All right. But we'll definitely take that note and review with the proper companies, with the post office, and make that change if possible.
Anyone else have any comments about the Parks Plan? Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, Blake, I want to commend you. I think this is very comprehensive and very helpful.
Thank you.
Tell you really take it personally. You can see, if I ask you a question, you probably know most of what you've seen out there. I want to commend John for listening to the Carroll Beach residents, because I know we had a pretty long meeting last time, and they had pretty strong opinions on how they felt. John, my question for you, now that the village has acquired this Village Green property over here, is that sped up any of these parks over here? Or?
To answer your question, you know, the village did recently acquire the land down here for the downtown area, and we're very excited to have that. We're also very excited to have this park plan in place. I do not believe we have an exact timeline on this project yet, and not to put you on the spot, but I'm not sure if Nathan has any timeline for that at this time, or is it something where it's just, it's still a couple of years out?
The current downtown plan, we have something in concept. We're going to clearly need to work to create something a little bit more formal as we attract developers and so forth. So I'd hate to put in a park prematurely. And right now the staff is really evaluating what type of public use would be the best to service the entire village. So That would be my comment at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Nate.
And then, John, I know a couple of years ago we got a bunch of impact fees to kind of share amongst all the parks. Do you have any timeline on when you might see some of that available for these improvements? Or?
Yeah, we do collect impact fees every time a business comes in, every time a permit is pulled for a single-family home, multifamily home. So all those funding mechanisms are in place. So we did recently spend it. Under the old guidelines, we had a set amount of years we had to spend that impact fee money on. I believe it was 10 years, and it was coming to a sunset. So in the Pleasant Prairie Park area and the Village Green area, we actually built the tennis courts, the basketball courts, and we made as many improvements as we could around any of the parks that we could. So as development speeds up, you're going to see more impact fee money spent in those areas where the development happens. Over the three iterations that we've had these plans now, we've been able to gain the land and develop parks for Village Green Park, Creekside Park, Brookside Gardens Park. So there's been a lot that's really been happening, and we have some really nice amenities. It's great that we've gone through this process and we've identified all the other parks, you know, like we just talked about with the Village Green Center, having those parks. So when a developer comes in, they understand, here's where the parkland has to be dedicated. Here's the amenities that it have to go. There's some park spaces that are active parks where they may have ball diamonds and playgrounds, and other ones are passive parks, like Giswaldo Park down in Carroll Beach. You know, that was determined just to be a very passive park. So once we get some funds available for that, we'll put the trails in, open it up so people can use it accordingly. But it's definitely been a great funding tool to have to get land from developers and the impact fees like you talked about to actually fund some of those improvements that need to be made.
Right, because, you know, everybody sees all the stuff going on in the village right now.
Correct.
They need to know, again, money's coming their way to kind of help all the parks.
Yeah. I guess one of the things to keep in mind is that we have specific zones. I believe there's 9-10 zones in the village. So as development happens in each of those zones, percentage of that money has to be spent for park amenities specifically in that zone. A part of it can be for the community parks, you know, because everyone uses it, but the majority of it has to be focused just in that zone area. Okay. And it has to be used for new items and not just repair and replacement items. So there are some limitations, but we do watch that money very closely, and once we have enough to add a new playground, to add some ADA, to change the flooring, like we were talking about, you know, add new flooring, to add stuff like that, we have it in our capital plan.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments? Well, it seems that the only addition that we seem to have had in this plan that they would like a suggestion in is in the Carroll Beach area, a little bit more information about this structure that may or may not be identified. So,
and just to be clear, there is one structure being identified on the plan, and I can't blame it on having my glasses because I have them on, but still can't see it very good. So there is a dune restoration. That's the one more to the north at the Prairie Shores Beach.
Correct.
That's what that green symbol represents in the
Correct.
Legend. And then the shelter, the 10x10 shelter, is in that area of Lakeshore Drive and 116th. There's a 10x10 behind the poles. You ride your bike, you pull up, you park your car, you sit there, eat lunch. So, but we can definitely have some information on that with a little bit more detail on that.
Wonderful. So,
I think maybe the term structure is misleading, right? That could be construed as a big thing. This is not to be envisioned to be a big thing.
I think
the rendering will help.
Absolutely. I mean, and those comments are well received.
So with that additional information we're requiring, can we have a motion to accept this plan?
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So we love the plan if we can just get clarification on the Carroll Beach area.
We will do that. And just so the Park Commission understands then, once all these edits are made, and staff has a couple more minor edits on the dates of when it has to follow and a couple of other things that we had found throughout there. So we'll make those changes. As soon as Blake and his team has those complete, we'll figure out when the next Park Commission is. We'll put out the public notice. It's got to be 30 days prior to that. Everything will be available for the public. Then it'll be noticed, and we'll have some information in the Village newsletter. We'll have some information on our website to get the word out as much as we can that, hey, this is coming. If you have some comments, want to be a part of it, please, you know, we welcome your comments on that. It'll go to the Plan Commission. When the Plan Commission approves it, and then the same process will happen, any revisions that the Plan Commission has, then it goes before the Village Board, and then the Village Board will have the final adoption of the document. We'll have that for 5 years. In 5 years, we'll start the process over again and update everything. So we definitely appreciate the board and their support, Blake, everything that he's done to really help us move forward, especially with all the grants and the evaluation of everything. It's a very valuable tool for staff to have when a developer comes in with their planning and development team, and just to identify what has to happen with the capital improvement plan. We're not in time right now to make capital improvements for 2019 because that budget process for the general fund has already been kind of set in motion. Mm-hmm. We can get some grants. It's something that we'll identify. We'll look at the impact fees for our funding sources. But definitely for 2020 and then the next 5 years moving forward, we're going to present these to the Village Board. And now we really have some teeth in. Here's why we need to replace this. Here's why we need to have these improvements. Here are the funding sources. So we definitely appreciate everyone's effort and review on this process.
Yeah, and just real quick, I want to thank you for your continued confidence in myself and my team. So thank you for having
Perfect.
Us on board.
We will be, because we're bound by certain rules at this meeting, I will ask that I will stay and listen to you after the meeting has been adjourned and hear some of your concerns, and maybe somebody else can. And we will let everyone know what's going on. We'll ask for your input again. But because of the rules here, I cannot take your comments anymore at this stage of the game. But I'll be happy to stay here and listen to you afterwards, if that's okay. Okay, great.
And I can stay also with staff and make sure that, at least your voices
are
heard.
I want to hear you tonight. You came here tonight because you were concerned. But because of this structure of the meeting, I can't hear you at this particular
moment. We have to adjourn this meeting, and then you can start
Correct.
From there.
We have to make an adjournment, so I'll be happy to talk to you afterwards. And one other thing, Mason, could you stay for a second afterwards because I wanted to ask you something. Eagle Scout guy, there you are. Okay, great. Okay, the last item is adjournment. May I have a motion to adjourn?
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.